Marco.
Hi, yes, and come on yet.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm fine.
How's Tony doing?
I couldn't make the class. Tony felt like he had to cut the grass, and I felt like I had to be out there to watch him because, you know, he's still in a week, but they're going to call him any day to go have that second procedure, so he wanted to cut the grass. And so anyway.
I wasn't asking because you didn't make it to the class. I was asking because, you know, what you went through over the weekend and so forth.
Yeah. Well, I've just about caught up with my sleep. We slept yesterday for about 3 hours, and that helped a lot.
Okay. So do you have any questions this evening?
No, but Malka is on. Maybe Malka does.
I know Malka does. We spoke about it earlier. I said it was a good class. Quick question. So, Malka, you want to ask your question?
Yes. We talked about, I guess, day four yesterday, about the end of the body being the foreskin, and then we didn't have enough time to discuss anything further. And my question was, why do we have the legs and the toes and the feet if the foreskin is the end of the body, as in Sarah Penn, and of course the female organ for the end of the body for the female side?
The end of the body for the female side is the vagina.
Right.
So are you complete with your question?
I think so. I know that it's for movement, you know, for motion, that we have legs and feet and toes, but I'm sure there's a spiritual side to it. You said that it has to do with whatever stuff you wrote that it belongs to.
Well, I was going to say, can I take a guess?
Sure.
Well, we've got to have net, sock, and hold. And the two legs represent net, sock, and hold.
Well, where does net, sock, and hold run from and to?
From Tiferet, I think. I'm trying not to think of the glyph, so.
Okay, well, it runs from Tiferet, yes. But within the body, where does it run from? Whenever we did the Tikkun HaNefesh, I always specified.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it goes to Yesod.
So let's step back from your answer, which your answer is partially correct. But let's step back because there's a major issue that Malka walked into. So I wanna use it as a teaching moment and not as a criticism.
Okay. Oh no, and Sam Mias lost that whole section A with Tony being in the hospital and sick, and you know, so that's fine. I don't take it as criticism. I just wanted to guess because as soon as she asked the question, the Tikkun HaNefesh chart came into my mind. And I see that I can hold as legs, you know, the two legs. But, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mistake that Malka walked into, and again, I want to emphasize this is not a criticism of Malka. It's a very common mistake. It's a very understandable mistake. She is saying that the purpose of the legs is to provide mobility. But do ducks have legs that provide mobility? Do birds have legs that provide mobility? They have wings. Stop thinking in terms of what you perceive physically. Use your imagination. Expand your consciousness. What is the purpose of legs? Well, angels only have one leg. They don't need a leg. They don't need two legs to be mobile. They have wings to be mobile. Why do angels have one leg? To indicate that they are more unified. We have two legs because it's quite possible that Hashem could have created us with one leg, and we could have jumped. He could have given us wings. And ultimately, we're going to use our psychic abilities to teleport ourselves, so we don't need the legs at all. Except we do need the legs. And that's what we need to understand about our body parts. Our body parts connect to creation. What do I mean by saying connect to creation? There are 10 sephirot. That is the creative process.
Brandela.
Good evening, Brandy. We're answering a question that Malka asked about body parts and about what are the purpose of the legs. And I'm using that as a teaching moment to expand it into expanding people's imagination and consciousness. There are 10 sephirot. They aren't 10 individual sephirot. They are 10 levels of consciousness. But they are also the creative process, as in Rabbi Ashlag's teaching of the four phases. Now, it's been a few years since we've discussed the four phases. But we never can forget it, because the four phases is how we can relate to the Tikkuni Zohar that we didn't understand. It's how we can relate to everything. There are 10 sephirot, but they compose the four phases. We have 10 sephirot, but there's only one God. So do we have 10 gods? God forbid. No, of course we don't have 10 gods. We have one God, composed of 10 levels of consciousness, composed of the 4 steps in the creative process. Does God see the creative process as 4 steps? Or is it only us looking up to him that we see the 4 steps of the creative process? And to reiterate, what are those 4 steps? Step 1. Hashem knocks on the door. The light knocks on the door of the vessel and says, let me in, I want to be revealed. Will you reveal me? He doesn't force his way in. He doesn't coerce his way in. It's a simple request. Will you reveal me? And the vessel says, sure. No skin off my nose. It's not difficult. No real effort. Come on in. I'll reveal you. What does it mean to reveal the energy of the light of Hashem? It means to have a form that the light that Hashem becomes revealed to something else. Hashem coming into the vessel, as in the endless world, the light and the vessel are in unity in the endless world. Does the vessel reveal the light if there's nothing else to perceive the light? Not a question I will answer. It's a question I am asking. The reason I won't answer it is because each of you have to develop your own answer to that question. It's also not something you would normally answer, because your Kabbalah teacher said, there's light and there's vessel. We don't understand it, and they're in unity in the endless world. And we all accepted it, those statements from my Kabbalah teacher. But that's not what the Kabbalah teacher was teaching us. He wasn't telling us this for us to not ask questions about it. But we don't, because we are confronted with the Western world and its logic. We are confronted with the limitations of a physical mind and body. And that's the trap that people fall into when they ask, what do we need legs for? You don't need legs for mobility, which is what was said. We need legs to conform to the 10 levels of consciousness, to conform to the 4 phases of the creative process. This is what we need to do. One of my Kabbalah teachers once said, there are 613 parts of the body. And that means each part of the body has 613 components. And she took that statement and said, in the eye, modern science has 20 parts of the body. They put names to 20 different aspects of the eye. EYE, I'm talking about. And she says, see how much they're missing that they don't know yet. There are 613 components in the eye. How come I don't see them? How come I haven't named them? And I'll give you a perfect example, and this is just my opinion, and it's my sense of intuitively what is right. There is the retina. Maybe it's not the retina. There's the optic nerve. The optic nerve is at the back of the eye. It receives the input of light, and it takes that electrical impulse from that light impinging on the optic nerve to the brain, which then interprets what it's seeing. But within the optic nerve, we know there are rods and whatever the other thing is called. There are rods, there are night vision, there's day vision, there's color vision. But all we said is we call it the optic nerve. We don't call it these other components. Maybe the components are a section of the optic nerve. Maybe it's what the optic nerve is built up on. As I mentioned, the rods and the crowns, I think. I forget the name. But you've heard it. In the modern world, we hear all kinds of things. What are they called, Randy?
Cones.
You
know,
cones?
Like cones?
Rods, yeah. Cones. Thank you.
Rods and cones.
Thank you. So maybe they're rods and cones, or maybe they're rods in certain locations to make up the difference between 20 items in an eye and 613. The point that I'm making is stop accepting what you perceive, what your knowledge is from modern science. Stop accepting the limitation that says we know everything. We know nothing. And if we admit to ourselves that we know nothing, we can expand our consciousness to say, well, we don't need legs for mobility because we're going to teleport. We don't need legs for mobility because we're going to grow wings. We don't need legs for mobility because the legs are going to grow the wings. They're going to become wings. No, and why limit it to wings? They're going to become motors so that we can fly without teleporting. We don't need we don't need magic carpets to fly. We can fly without it. Now, our body is composed of 10 sephirot. 10 levels of consciousness. So our legs, well, let's start at the top. The head is the Keter. And within the Keter, we have 10 sephirot. So what are those 10 sephirot? Well, you have a skull, according to the Tikkun HaNefesh. You have a skull. You have a left brain and a right brain, and a bridge across the two brains. And the brain at the back of the neck that has the responsibility for the breathing in the heart and just the natural functions that we don't think about. Obla mangrata, something like that. So how many parts did I mention so far? Skull, right brain, left brain, the crossover, and the Ublangada. So that's five. Then you have two eyes. Then you have two ears. You have two nostrils, but one nose. You have a mouth with 32 teeth. How many parts have I mentioned in the Keter? Now we know the body, which is below the neck, there's only seven. There's chesed, which is the right arm. But then the right arm has the right shoulder, the right upper arm, the right lower arm, the right hand, the right five fingers. We have a left arm. That's Givurah. We have Tiferet, which is the chest that runs from the neck, the bottom of the neck, to the diaphragm. Well, there's a lot of things below the diaphragm in what we would call the chest, but it's not the chest. That's Netzach and Hod, which runs from the diaphragm to the right knee and the left knee. But they tell us that Netzach and Hod never separate. They're always unified, which is what our belly section is all about, the unity of Netzach and Hod. Yesod is the sexual organ, but it's also the spine. And it's the sexual organs of male and the sexual organs of female. So what is below the knee? Why are the legs growing below the knee to the foot? Where's Malchut? Malchut is the feet or the lower leg and feet? And are the feet separate even as we see them? We have a left foot and a right foot, or are they one foot? That looks to us as two. The Tikkun HaNefesh chart helps us heal the body that's gone out of balance in the various parts. When you become ill, where is the illness? It's in a sephirah. But it's not just the sephirah of one level. I have to look at what is the keter of the chesed of the body. Well, the chesed of the body is the right arm. What's the keter of that right arm? Is it the shoulder? Is it the artery that runs down through the neck? And down the arm itself? And then splits into the various components and runs into each finger. Why do we have five fingers? Well, we have five fingers on each hand and five fingers toes on each foot, and we have two Brits. Total of 22. 10 in the hands, 10 in the feet, and the two Brits, the two circumcisions. Where are the two circumcisions? The male organ, of course, is circumcised. The female organ is also already circumcised, doesn't need to have anything removed. But where is the 22nd? It's in the tongue. Your tongue folds. It has a circumcision in the tongue. Every part of the body is teaching you something about the Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah is teaching you different aspects of the body. This is what we have to learn. This is what we have to stop limiting ourselves. So, Malka, I hope I've answered your question and caused you to ask 25 more, maybe 26. You don't have to ask them tonight if you don't want to.
Okay.
I'm not putting you on the spot. But if you have any other questions tonight, feel free to ask them. And that goes for anybody else.
I have another question. When you speak of the Shekinah, is it always related to Malkut? Because we talked about that this afternoon, about it being in Shem.
Right.
And we called it Malkut. So wherever she moves from city to city or from world to world, you always refer that back to Malkut. You would call that the Malkut of Keset, the Malkut of Keter, Malkut of whichever world you're in. Are we referencing her to Malkut every time we speak of her?
The definition of the Shekhinah, which does not appear in the Torah, but it appears in the Talmud and it appears in the Kabbalah, in the Zohar. The Shekhinah is a name for Malchut when she is separated from Kadosh Baruch Hu. We've been using the term in the translation of the Tikkuni Zohar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Mm-hmm.
What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, it's Hashem. No, if it was Hashem, they would say it. They would call it Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the husband of the Shekhinah. Well, what is the husband of the Shekhinah? Is it Yesod? Is it Tiferet? All things are relative, so you need to define the situation. But the Shekhinah is always the Malchut separated from the Zeranpin. So they will define it in the academic circles as the Shekhinah is the female aspect of God. But what does that mean? What is the female aspect of God? Isn't God a he? No,
well,
God is both he and she. And also it. God is a manifesting entity. That's an attribute of God. God doesn't move. God is passive. God has thoughts that are different than ours. These are all attributes of God. So, what is God? What is Hashem? We can't know. Because if we could name Hashem, then you can understand Hashem and you can become Hashem. But Hashem is more than we can handle while we're in the physical body. Hashem is our friend. Hashem is our father. Hashem is our king. Hashem is all of these different relationships. But we are using the word Hashem because we can't truly understand him. We can't name him. But we can say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, HaKadosh, the Holy Blessed One, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is an attribute or a couple of attributes of Hashem. Relative to the Shekhinah, relative to Malchut, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on a higher level. It's more holy. So in the Kabbalah, my understanding at this moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the husband of Malchut, the husband of the Shekhinah. It's the Shekhinah when she is not unified with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when the Shekhinah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unified, now we have the name Hashem that can help us understand it. We probably have other names if we think about it. So with that understanding, with that definition, we spoke earlier in our Deep Zohar class tonight about the four cities that represent energy vortexes, energy centers in the land of Israel. One is in the north, and it's the
Tiberias,
or Lake Kinneret, or what's the city that the Kabbalists lived in? Say again.
Spot.
So typically, Tiberias and Spot are put together, and they are one city, one area. Another one is Shechem. Another is Jerusalem itself. So that's three, and the fourth one is Beersheba. Beersheba. But now, where do I put the Cave of Machpelah? I think it's near Shem. So, we have modern names of the cities, and we're trying to put that together with what the Bible is teaching us and how we relate to the names of the Sephirot. So it's all a little confusing, because we're using three different vocabularies. The modern name of the city, the biblical name of the city, and the Sephirot. But Well, why is it four cities? Well, the four cities represent the four phases. But how does it, what does that have to do with a city?
Well, right around that area is, it's called Kiryat Arba, which means city of...
The city of four, Kiryat Arba, correct, the city of four, which means that there's the four within the four. But essentially what those names are dealing with are energy vortexes, as I mentioned. Because as we learned in the classes on the land of Israel, the energy flows into to Zion and then into Jerusalem. And from Jerusalem, it follows energy lines. They're not straight lines, they're curved. They're lines associated with the a certain mathematical indication, which becomes a the phi symbol in mathematics. It's a series of numbers that creates the spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And the spiral goes throughout creation, but what is the cause of the spiral is this mathematical symbol of phi, this series of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mean to confuse you, but I'm trying to show you how there's no separation between math, physicality, spirituality, creative process, consciousness. They're all the same thing. They're just different vocabularies.
Mm-hmm.
And in the physical body, we're so inundated in separation that it's hard to perceive it as the same thing.
May I ask a question now? I don't know if you're finished or not. I don't want to interrupt you.
I'm so far from finished. Who knows where I'll begin? Go ahead.
Okay. It may be that this is a different frame of reference about the Shekinah, but I remember about a couple of weeks ago in the Tikkuni Zohar, it made the reference that the Shekinah was flowing through the blood. And I remember when I read it, I thought, oh, well, I thought the nefesh was in the blood, you know. And then a while ago when you were mentioning Zeron Pin and knowing that the Vav and the final hay would represent the Shekinah too. And when the hay and the vav connect, but are in unity. In other words, if we've separated yad hay from vav hay because of some negativity that we've done, then when the Shekinah and Baruch Hu become unified, then they can then be unified with yad hay. And I don't know if that's the way to say it, but that's kind of the way I see it.
And everything you said is real, but you're saying it in steps, which is the creative process. We call it tashuv, teshuvah. Tashuv, return the hay.
Right.
Did we separate the hay in because of the negative action? Or did we separate the hay as a creative process that has to be reversed? Mm-hmm. And we have to recreate the connection of the hey to the vav. You understand the different ways of perceiving the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I think there was a lesson for the Ari in one of the parshas a couple of weeks ago that had to do with the divine name and healing. I missed that class. I printed the handout to read it, but I didn't get to read it yet. But it had to do with the separation of the tetragrammaton of, and
correct.
And it made me think, and like I said, I haven't read it yet, but you know, as you're printing you kind of see a few little things. But it made me think of the four deaths prayer, you know, that we say at the bedtime Shema. Which really, that's what you're doing. You're taking each letter that somehow you've disconnected from, of, you know, from Hashem's name. And I suppose they're all connected. Right now, they're little flying concepts that I'm trying to put together.
And I have a sense of them, but at this point you're trying to use words where mm-hmm. you need pictures, and I can't see your pictures, you can't see my pictures,
yeah.
But we think in terms of pictures.
Well, I know, because
and
I can see the page from the prayer book.
Don't describe the pictures. And that's why you have to learn to meditate, which is what we're going to be concentrating on during this coming year. Because that's the message in the phrase, it's a time to become wise. Because you have to begin to see in pictures. Now those pictures may be the Hebrew letters, or they may be physical pictures. But if you're going to limit yourself to what you know, what you've experienced, and not allow yourself the growth of imagination, we're limiting. We're choosing to limit.
And when you, in the recording of 5979, which I listened to it this afternoon, parts of it, and it says become wise or be wise. Be wise, I believe is what it said. Are you speaking of be wise, or is it speaking of being wise is to keep your conscious active as to the activities or the energy in this year coming. I mean, we do see, or I see some things that was spoken of in the listings about law enforcement, let's say. And, you know, they're trying to do away with ICE. I see the meetings going on with these new Supreme Court appointees, with all the chaos that's taken place, which has really not ever happened that I know of before. And so, you know, you spoke of that toward the end of the list of the recording. So I guess what I'm asking, what's your description of to be wise?
To be wise means to be a living Torah. To be wise means to cleave to Hashem. How do you cleave to Hashem? The Torah said that it's good for a man to cleave to his wife. And by cleaving to his wife, he learns to cleave to Hashem. The word wisdom in the Kabbalah means the Torah. How much of the Torah can you comprehend? It's a time to become wise. It's a time to grow your connection, your understanding to the Torah. It's time for you to cleave to the Torah. How do you cleave to the Torah?
Meditate on it day and night.
I'll be presenting a handout. It's not, you probably won't get it done until Kislev. I hope to do it before then. But I'll be giving a handout in a short class explaining the handout. And it's literally, go and practice it.
Go practice.
Go ahead, Marka.
You say go practice. You mean go and walk the Torah, and what you learn, you walk it out.
No, you live it out.
Or you do those mitzvahs. Live it out. Okay.
What does it mean to be a living Torah? Torah is the soul of God, the soul of Hashem. Cleave to Hashem, you become a living Torah. You become a living aspect of Hashem. Everything that you do, from the mundane task of going to the bathroom to the mundane task of your daily work, to the wonderful, elevated task of Shabbat, all of that is being a living Torah. If you are doing those mundane tasks and you, with the consciousness of utilizing that task to share with someone else, you're being a living Torah. But how do you become a living Torah? It's called practice. It's called train your mind to think in terms of sharing whatever the physical action you're doing. So how does going to the bathroom share with someone else? The only reason you should go to the bathroom is because to keep the body healthy, you have to generate waste products. And those waste products are used for fertilizer and for animal food and for other things. So you see the continuity in creating a waste product. Now, normally, when somebody says something like that, everybody laughs. But during this next year, we need to strive to include more of that consciousness in all of those mundane tests that we do. Because that is what will bring Mashiach. No more questions, right? No more questions for now?
For now, maybe. But I'm nothing but a big question
through our brains. Just floating through our brains right now.
Malka, thank you for the question.
Yes, it was excellent. Welcome.
You all have a beautiful evening.
Okay, you too.
I need to tell you that tomorrow the Slichot service is going to be shortened. I have to leave about 10 minutes to 11. My time, so that's 10 minutes to 10 your time. So I will start a little early and try and do it as rapidly as possible, but I may have to leave you early like I did today. And for that, I apologize.
So you're going to come on a little early, you said?
No, I haven't set up the recording early. But I will start early. I'm going to start about a quarter to 10 my time.
Okay.
So when you come on at 10, if you came right on at 10, you would find us in the middle. But most people are coming on after the 10 anyway, so. And I'm always announcing the page numbers, so you'll be able to catch up right away.
Good.
You all have a good night.
Okay, you too.
And looking forward to the high holidays. Shalom to all.
Yes. Shalom.
Shalom.